Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers, plain and fancy, it's really quite a
The Media Project is underway. Here we are, the editor, sounds like I'm stuttering, right? And the professor, Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, is here, our host as always. Sir. That's right. Thank you very much. Stu Shinsky, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Gentlemen.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you. It's a very hopeful sign that you would think so. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Here we are, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and perhaps even a little insight into the news media issues of the week.
And maybe one or two guffaws.
You have no idea. We just had a fund drive, highly successful million-dollar fund drive here at the host station, WAMC. I mean, there must have been 100 people who called in. At least it seemed that way to me, saying that the Media Project ought to be an hour. And in each case, I said, I'd like to do that, but yeah. Rex won't let us.
Yes. Oh, Rex. Yes. It always came back to Rex, I heard.
Is that right? Yes. There's, well, it's
Rex
always...
I said, Rex is very busy.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like the leader of China always has somebody else to blame things on.
Sure.
And takes a different position. Yes.
Sure.
We know where the real power resides in this room, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Power. So we need to talk about actually ABC News, because there's some really interesting lessons on this. And this comes from an interesting story in the Washington Post by their reporter Paul Farhi. He talks about the fact that World News Tonight has climbed to the summit of the Nielsen ratings. Now, this is an interesting development. We may think that it's not so important anymore, these evening newscasts, but still, they are each watched by millions of Americans.
Yeah,
and generate millions and millions of dollars for the networks, which is, I think, the heart of this story.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Get the ratings, get them any way you can, change your mission to get the ratings. I think that's what's at play here.
Right, Stu. And, you know, it's interesting because they've really worked out algorithms,
yep,
which basically say every point is worth so many advertising dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're winning by 2 or 3 points, boy, does the money come rolling in.
So here's how they did it, and it is instructive, I think. When Diane Sawyer became the anchor about 5 years ago, the show became softer. That is, they decided to do a little bit more about social issues, let's say, less about hard news. And then last September, they brought in this 41-year-old anchor, David Muir, to replace Diane Sawyer. And it has been even more that way, even more news you can use. So, for example, World News Tonight is the only evening newscast that does not have a congressional correspondent. The guy who's going to cover Congress also covers the White House and is the chief political reporter. That's an amazing change for what you would think would be a huge beat for a nationwide TV newscast.
Now, what do you make of that? Is it the fact that one could come up with a hypothetical explanation, which is that people don't like government, therefore they're not going to give it to you?
Yeah, right? It's boring?
People can't relate to it. It's not the... I mean, it is for many people, of course, but what the ratings are showing here is that people are changing their news consumption habits, their news consumption interests, and honestly, they're changing their news consumption tastes, where it's not just the traditional news that once we thought was important, and the investigative, and these things are still important in different ways. But what's happening here is that this is, you have a show on WMC called Vox Pop, People
sure.
Speak. This is people speaking, and they're listening to the people and they're giving them what they feel the people
okay.
want.
Okay. As I have said before, if we have a show on chocolate chip cookies, we have 5 phones, the lights are on
yes.
for every moment of the thing. This is how many nuggets you put in and all the rest mm-hmm. of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. If we have a show on state legislatures, you got to hit them with a broom to get
That's
them to
right.
pull.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Actually, what really draws the comments on your shows are when you bring on the veterinarians and people can talk about their dogs and cats, right?
And their
That's
dog
huge.
Poop.
And Ebola.
Rex is exactly right. Your dog poop and whether whether the hello, my dog eats his own poop.
And this so is the media project.
And how do you stop that? But it's very popular. Is the
it
point?
Is exactly.
Is the point? But Medical Monday, you know, which we talk about our own medical issues with MDs and things, that's a very popular program too.
Well, and yet you come to a question of what is a responsibility. Now, your benefit here is you have 24 hours. You can fill it. If you're World News Tonight and you have basically 23 minutes to give you the world, what World News Tonight has done on ABC is they devote half as many minutes to Washington stories as CBS during the first 4 months this year, 40% less than NBC. So exactly as you say, Washington is not getting the attention, but what is their responsibility?
But Rexy, you're the head guy at a newspaper, and you are one of the most responsible human beings I have ever met in my entire life. You're just a totally responsible fellow. You graduated first in your class at the Columbia Journalism.
I have never heard that
before. At the Columbia Journalism School. And you'll be damned if you're going to do that, right? You're not going to cater to the masses in terms of I'll give you what you want as opposed to what's good for you, will you?
Well, we give people lots of comics. We give them two crossword puzzles every day. We like to put on the front page, I like to have on the front page a story that I call the Golly Martha. Yeah, that is the story of a guy sitting there, this stereotypical notion of a guy sitting there in his jammies in the morning looking at the newspaper, and he says to his wife, Golly Martha, listen to this. That's the origin of that term. And that is sometimes not hard news. Now, I think we all try to do really hard news. I just got a letter from a woman, a researcher at Fordham University, who's doing a nationwide study of investigative reporting in American newspapers based upon the premise that it is declining as a result of market trends.
Of course. In other words, you're firing a lot of reporters who could do that work.
Yeah.
Because you have to.
And we're not doing the hard-edged watchdog work that we used to, she says. But her research shows that actually the Times Union, we emerge as one of the stars in her study, which is why she wants to interview
Times
me.
Times Union does, as says, does Stu Shinsky and the Poughkeepsie Journal, which just picked up a huge load of awards.
As did the Albany Times Union. We both had 21 awards in the most recent New York State Associated Press.
As did WAMC.
And the broadcast side, I was getting there, the broadcast side, WAMC, wore a hole in the carpet going up to the podium to accept awards,
right.
I might say. So definitely. So yeah, and this is, I mean, you bring it up with a laugh, but of course it's very important. And the flip side to all of this is that when there's a big, fat, important news story, such as the prison break here in upstate New York, or something happens, that's when CNN's ratings go through the roof.
Absolutely.
And that's when people would tune in because that's the moment. That's the buzz of the moment that people want to know.
By the way, where is that news coming from? I should point out that our investigations editor, Brendan Lyons, has been on live CNN by Skype from our newsroom each of the last couple of days because that's where the expertise is. And the TV reporters, of course, swoop in and pick up the news from the local reporters.
That's right.
Who have the information at hand. But it is a tough balancing act. And if I were running ABC News, I don't know what is the responsible thing and what is the market building thing because our responsibilities are.
But wait, come on. If you were running ABC News and they said, you're this highly successful, very dapper, very debonair, you know, 6 foot something guy with gray hair. And they brought you in to be the face of it, and you decided you were going to take the responsible way as opposed to the other way. They'd fire your behind. You know that. I mean, because you started this whole thing by talking about what every ratings point was worth.
Mm-hmm.
But ABC also, and the other networks, the
isn't
evening...
that where that Stephanopoulos fellow is?
Well, yes, he is.
And
at
we
ABC.
Talked about him in the last couple of days. Because,
well, with his,
you know,
donations to the
Clinton
Foundation,
yeah, a little
yes.
too close. Yeah.
But if you look at the portfolio of network news these days, it used to be just the 6 o'clock or the 6:30 network broadcast with Chancellor or Cronkite or those folks back then. But now it's they have 2020. They have the news magazines. They have the morning shows. It's a much broader portfolio of opportunities to give news of all types.
Morning show is bigger.
Morning show may generate more profits than the evening newscast.
But Uncle Walter would not have put up with this, would he, if he had to make that decision?
He didn't have to. It wasn't a choice back then.
Yep, yep. It was much easier back then. This is also an interesting statistic that I just wanted to pass along. The average correspondence news report on World News Tonight was just 100 seconds last fall. That's okay, a minute 40, right?
You
just have to count that. Compared with 138 seconds on NBC and 121 on CBS. So 100 seconds, a minute 40, when I was a TV reporter back in the mid-80s, it was not unusual for me to do a three-minute package. So that would be 180 seconds. An average correspondent report of 100 seconds on a very complex issue is a big deal.
As we've said before, it's short attention span theater out there.
Well, and that actually is that the short attention span is one of the issues that we all have to deal with at WAMC as well as on our websites. You know,
I'm a little confused.
Well,
about what you
people
mean by that.
Don't have attention spans that they used to have, and you have to grab people. It has always been the case. The first guy who ever taught me anything about journalism said you have to get people in the count your leads. You have to get people in the first 8 words of your lead, or maybe the first 10.
I believe that.
I mean, and I still will count the number of words in a lead if I'm writing a news story.
Yeah, no, I believe that, but it is so interesting, Rex, that we have come over to that. Here at Public Radio, I just wanted to counter the obvious insult that you offered.
I heard nothing.
Here at Public Radio, numbers are going up. They're going up.
Up.
Yeah.
Now, soaring, actually.
And a lot of people mention that the reason is the media project.
Which could be an hour if we thought about it.
That we play. However, our numbers are going up, and there is an audience for sophisticated news, for news that, that really gets to the thing, and some of our stories, in my opinion, are too long. Mm-hmm. In other words, I will listen to some story about a poverty march that goes on for quite a while. I think sometimes we don't make the right judgment about what each thing deserves.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a real hard choice.
It's
absolutely
tough.
True.
Yeah.
And that is where you need to have thoughtful leadership that does pay attention to trends. You have to make some stories shorter than they used to be in order to have room for the longer, important stuff.
And there is software now there's something called Chartbeat, where you can tell how long people spend reading an online story. Literally, they will stay in 10 seconds, 30 seconds. And we use that tool to say, you know what? People are not spending the time to read this entire story, so maybe we're wasting our efforts with that bottom third of this, and we should take that time and effort and put it elsewhere and provide more or different or varied news.
I had an interesting experience. Yes, Mike Spain, who's often on with you on the round table in the morning. He's a great guy. He's our associate
editor.
Kudos
to you for having hired him and kept him.
Oh, he's the first guy I ever met at the Times Union. When I first came up here to Albany and the state capitol, Mike was then for a while running the Capitol Bureau for the Times Union. And here's this guy who introduced himself to me in the hallway. Nice guy. And now he does everything. And he could probably put out the paper by himself if he had to. Anyway, we digress.
We love him.
Mike walked into my office yesterday carrying this humongous TV screen, flat screen TV, which we're going to put up on the wall so that we can have Chartbeat and other software tracking our digital performance instantly, so that we know what stories are trending, where our traffic is coming from.
It's very helpful stuff.
And now the thing is, this helps you to determine how to guide your digital presentation. It does not determine what our print product is. We know what's different there. And sometimes you have to ignore the numbers when you have something that is really important.
We'll have to. But what is the breakdown in terms of who is looking at each product? Obviously, the people who are looking at electronic, I'm just assuming, are younger. And then the people who look at the old stuff,
correct,
the old way, are a little bit older, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Now, that group, of which I am one, certainly, is dying.
But he'll make it through the show, we promise.
They're dying. So sooner or later, there'll be fewer of them and more of the other guys, right?
Yes, now, that is happening.
I think I mentioned this before, but, I read the Times a couple of times a night. I read yours paper. And then they're always trying to figure out how to get the advertisers to monetize the news system, better. And, in the middle of the Times article, there'll be, about 2 or 3 inches, it looks like, of an ad. You have to go below that ad in order to keep reading the article. You're getting it whether you like it or not. Is that working?
Well, working better than having no revenue at all.
But
sure.
Is more money coming in? Is there an increase in the amount of money coming in to monetize the digital?
Digital is growing, yes. Digital revenue is growing. That's
clearly growing. The question is
it growing fast enough?
Can it grow fast enough? Exactly. Yeah. And will it over time be able to sustain as print advertising declines and that revenue disappears? Can you make it up on the digital side? And that is the $84,000, $64,000, $1,064,000 question.
Well, I know we've talked about this a million times, but I just want to ask you guys, because you really are the experts in this, whether or not people who are looking at this stuff are willing to pay to advertise. What is it about advertising? When you see the physical ad, you're willing to pay for it, But when you're reaching all those eyeballs, you're not willing to pay for it. Does anybody understand that?
Oh, I see what you're asking. Why is it that print advertising...
It was not a good...
Well, it wasn't so bad.
Thank you.
Well, why is print advertising more expensive, more valuable per eyeball, right?
Yes.
The cost per thousand, the CPM, they call it. I don't know. I think that's a remnant, perhaps, of... Well, it is actually an inventory issue. It's fundamental economics. It's how much inventory there is of digital advertising out there versus the inventory available of print. We are the only print products, basically, in our respective markets, the dominant print products in any case. And so in order to buy an ad there, we're worth more. Whereas digitally, there's so much competition, there's so much space out there to buy, that drives down the price.
And something as simple as when you open a newspaper and you have two facing pages, the ad is sitting there. Mm-hmm. And maybe you are reading the story, but the ad is there and the ad has your peripheral vision. So there is that durability. Maybe it's 10 seconds, maybe it's 40 seconds, maybe it's longer. It's there, it's in front of you, and people are accustomed to that. Online is changing so fast, and readership habits are migrating in so many different ways that the way the advertising is delivered, even that is constantly evolving from the ads that used to pop up to the ads that used to drop down to the ads that used to come up from the bottom. So the whole model is topsy-turvy.
And now we have to find the X.
To exit out, yes.
Yeah, that's hard to find.
Or wait 10 seconds and it'll disappear.
So two trends that are happening there. One of them is more events, for example. We are doing events that can be marketed with our journalism so that you're getting some revenue from that.
Give me an example.
Well, you see it especially with like weekly publications, including both digital. You see it with business publications, for example, that have often had breakfasts that you pay money for to meet newsmakers and so on. We're all going to be doing more of that. NPR is doing more of that. In fact, NPR, president of NPR, who's been in the job for a year, says that live events with local stations are a key element going forward.
Well, that's what he says.
He says that.
I don't
By the
it.
Way, what do you think of this background? Listen to this. A guy who's created E! Entertainment Television, helped to launch MTV, helped to launch VH1, ran a venture capital firm. Does that sound like the resume of somebody who's leading National Public Radio?
No.
Isn't that interesting?
No, not to me. But
it does now.
But Michael Oreskes, who's the news director.
The head of news, that's right.
That's a whole different thing.
Mike is a real news guy.
Let me put it this way. Hello, everybody, and hello, whoever's recording this. I think there is a big difference between what we have come up with now and what one would expect of an NPR head person. See what I mean? I sat next to him at the opening of the Clark.
His name is Jarl Mohn, right? Jarl? Or you say Harl?
Mohn.
Mr. Anyway. Mohn.
Mr. Yeah. Mohn is the head of NPR. Yes, so.
So I talked to him, for a while. I think that the jury is out. We've had a whole lot of heads of NPR, and they tend to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is not told to people is the relationship between the member station and NPR, which has always been contentious and always been difficult. So we'll have to see. But I don't think it's the fact that the guy's going to show up here. Because NPR is always trying to get the money from the...
It's a business position. The top job is not a news position, per se. It's a business position.
No, yeah, but NPR is always trying to get our money. Let's put it that way. I've often frequently said the 2,000-year-old man was right. Did you meet Robin Hood, they say to the guy who came out of the cave? Is it true he stole from the rich and gave to the poor? No. He stole from the rich, he stole from the poor, and he kept everything. And that, I like to say, is NPR in their relationship with members.
Thank you for listening to the final Media Project.
That's right. It's been really wonderful to see you all. You know, one of the interesting factors, though, here is also the other way that people are trying to get revenue is through what we call native advertising. That's the new trend right?
What's that?
We used to call advertorial. Well, CNN, right? CNN's doing it now?
Yeah.
CNN is apparently offering the opportunity for sponsored news.
Yeah, just like...
They will broadcast.
Now, you can read in the New York Times, right, the Republic of something.
And it's labeled
pages,
as such.
Full pages out. No, well, it's labeled, but is it labeled? I mean, is it labeled? Is it... scream at you, this is paid for, or is there a tiny little thing? Sometimes it's boxed, number one. And number two, there's a tiny little thing at the top.
Well, and there's different typography. Like we do this at the Times Union. We reserve our typography, the typefaces that we use for news. We do not allow advertising to use.
News only.
So that will look different to people, and it'll help them to distinguish between what is news and what is not. But on commercial radio, in this market and elsewhere, if you go into the AM band, a lot of that programming is purchased.
Right.
It seems like
it's real
programming.
You got a couple of lawyers in the morning. meaning they buy the program and they're trying to attract, people to come to their firm, and they answer questions, and it's purchase time.
Or even it's infomercials. On TV, CNN may be late to the party on this one. You can put on, the greatest wonderful adventures of a brand new can opener at Channel 9 at 2 o'clock in the morning. the infomercials are not new, and newspapers and newsrooms, they are doing it. There are newsrooms, of course, that they may have a hospital that sponsors some content and things. You just have to label it and be transparent to your viewers or readers.
Well, Stu, because I'm so old, I frequently watch what we call the Me Channel.
Me TV?
Me TV.
Yes. Yeah. I watch that.
And, you get The Rifleman, you get Gunsmoke.
Oh, Superman is on there.
Superman, that kind of stuff.
My favorite.
But the ads on there are geared to me, to my age group, yes. Which is, do you know how many people in the United States use catheters?
It's astounding.
So they're pushing out catheters.
Wonderful.
They're
thing.
Putting out stuff that will get the calluses off your heels.
Assisted living information.
All right. We got to get off of this. This is the Media Project. Stu Shinsky.
This was the Media Project.
Alan Shartok and Rex Smith. If you want to be a part of the conversation, I can't imagine why, send it to media@wamc.org. Media@wamc.org. We need to talk about something that is going on in New York State having to do with the prison break, which you mentioned earlier. Huge story coming out of Dannemora.
It's interesting. It really is.
Here is an interesting element of it having to do with the media, and that is that when Governor Andrew Cuomo went into the state prison to look at the place, to see how it was exposed, how these guys got out, he did not have reporters. He did not have a photographer from the media along with him. He had his own staff photographer. Very fine photographer, by the way, who used to work for the Times Union, a guy named Phil Cameras, a wonderful photographer. But he is on the payroll of the governor. And the reporting pool coverage is a problem because while we may get one report with a print reporter, we're not getting our own photography. We're not getting stuff. Which
and you're
may
the lead paper
stuff.
On this.
Yeah, absolutely. And if the governor's off, and this is not the first time, this has been going on recently with the Cuomo administration for a couple of years now, where we don't get access photographically to the stuff that he's doing. We only get the stuff that is provided.
So for example, Cuomo insisted on doing what the murderers had done in getting out. So he went under the thing.
He traced the route they took.
And then there was a photograph, I believe, I'm told, I didn't see it, of him popping his head out of the manhole. And you see now Cuomo's head coming out of the manhole, which some people are saying is sort of equal to Dukakis in the tank, that it might be a little bit over the top or under the top as you would look.
I didn't see that. We didn't get that photo, right? Because we didn't have a real journalist, working somebody
on our
payroll.
I heard about it, but I did not see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
But
it
it's interesting.
In fact, maybe we all made it up.
Maybe we did. Probably not, but maybe. One of the things with this is that when you hear pool sort of coverage of something, it's typically members of the media who are providing that, such as a courtroom situation where they might allow one photographer, and that photographer might be from the Poughkeepsie Journal or the Albany Times Union, but they're asked to provide that content to the other media organizations. That's so you don't have 55 photographers in the newsroom. But when it's the governor's staffer who's doing this, they're going to have final say on what gets disseminated, and that's the issue.
Made worse by the fact that not everybody gets into prison.
Right.
Yeah. There are locked doors between you and the inside, so he really does have his control on that.
And I can understand. You don't want 40 photographers traipsing through. Here's how they escape and have it out there, but you can have two media people come through and not disrupt.
And a photographer. It's not going to be problematic. We need to have people who work as journalists who make their own decisions as to what is going to be released, not the governor's PR staff making that decision.
Well, Rexy, we're running out of time, but I just want to say that I have never seen a situation where, because it's assumed they were getting some help, where a single individual has been in the news every day. I think it traipses right on the line of whether or not this is responsible journalism, that before an arrest is made, before, just on the basis of being a suspect, this woman is being sort of brought out.
That's interesting. She hasn't been, that's an interesting question.
She has been identified. Her photo has been out
as
there.
As we speak.
And her
sexual history and everything else has been raised.
It's been everything but the prosecution charge, or the police charge, rather.
Final point we need to make today is a word of memory for an unknown journalist named Vincent Musetto, a retired editor for the New York Post. We remember him. He died at the age of 74, and why do you remember him? Because he wrote that amazing headline, Headless Body in Topless Bar.
It's a great headline.
He says it's the greatest headline of his life.
And we talk about these days about let's lure the audience. Let's be engaging. That's it right there. They were doing this in 1970 whatever. So it's not new, but great, classy headline.
Yes. 1983, as a matter of fact. Okay. So, Mr. Musetto, thank you for that.
R.I.P.
R.I.P., absolutely. That's the media project for today. Rex Smith, Stu Shinsky, and Ellen Chartok, thanks for joining us.
Really, see you next quite time. A bar. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk, hold the press, hold the press.